Let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They'd have everybody throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2006 NFL season.
Sack Gus Combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Let's go, let's go.
Hey, kids, we're back. How about that? Good stuff, absolutely good stuff. I have to admit, I had my doubts. I know that many of you think that, and certainly recall that I actually did not think the Patriots would win. And here we are, back for another week of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is John Rook, and yes, we live to broadcast another week on the program before we go into the off-season hibernation mode, and I'm very happy to be back with you. I know, hey, this is great stuff. We get an extra week to talk football, we talk about the Patriots, and I'll go right off the bat right now. I said last week, we visited with Hank Bauer, who is a former Charger and a member of the Chargers radio broadcast team when he was on the program last Thursday. And I told Hank, I said I thought the winner of the game between the Patriots and the Chargers would win the Super Bowl. Guess what? I'm going to stick with that. There you go. Good night, everybody. It's over. It's done. It's done. Super Bowl XLI. Get your stuff already printed up. Here we go. It's over. Gary's looking at me like I got three heads. I realize he's still got to play
game.
Yeah,
this just can't be good.
No, it's not. It's not. It won't be easy. Trust me, it won't be easy. But, I mean, what kind of a prognosticator would I be if I didn't stick with my original premise, my original prediction? You know? And the prediction was, hey, that I really thought that the winner of the Patriots-Chargers game would win the Super Bowl. So, that being said, I'm going to stick with that. I haven't yet decided how I think the game is going to break down yet. It's still a little early. I'll work on that for Thursday's show this week. But right now, I like the Patriots' chances. It doesn't really have anything to do with whether you know or not the Colts, you know, play up to a certain level or play down to a certain level or what have you. I just happen to think that you know the two best teams right now overall in the NFL and the way they're playing happen to reside in the AFC. I don't believe that the Colts' resurgence on defense, such as it has been through their two playoff games, I still think that you're going to have to show me, because I think that they've done it largely through two teams that are extremely flawed. And I say that with respect to the Baltimore Ravens from the from a week ago, but or from this last week. But let me tell you, you know, Baltimore is not a good offensive team. In fact, I think they downright stink. And Steve McNair was horrible last week. And I don't think that had anything to do with the Colts' defense making him horrible. I thought he was just pathetic. Kept waiting, and the Colts, thank goodness they had Adam. Thank goodness they had him. I mean, come on, 15-6, are you kidding me? Please, or whatever the score was, 15-6. I mean, that was a joke. So, I don't think the Colts have faced anybody like the Patriots. I certainly don't think they've faced anybody like Tom Brady. And based on what I saw Brady do this last week, and you know, when he had the ball late in the game, and it was a 21-21 score, I knew, and you knew, and everybody else in Patriots Nation knew that he would lead them down the field. That there was no doubt in my mind, and I knew that there would be no doubt in your mind either, that, you know, with the game on the line and the Patriots with a shot to win, that they would come through and do it. Why? Because it's the playoffs. That's why. It absolutely is all about the playoffs. And he has delivered and delivered and delivered time and time and time again. And I have no reason to believe it won't happen again. As long as this team doesn't get itself dead and buried early. You know, a couple of early mistakes that lead directly to opposing touchdowns. And you get yourself in a 14 or a 17 or, you know, heaven forbid, a 21-0 hole. That really, it would just be, that'd be a little much, I think, to climb out of. But as long as you have a shot, you know, you're within, say, two possessions of a tie or the lead with at least half of the fourth quarter still to go, you got a shot. And if you've got time on the clock and you're one possession from the lead, I'd put my money on number 12 to get it done. And that's why I think, above all, the Patriots will win this Sunday. Why? Because who else has proven otherwise? The Chargers couldn't do it, and they were the quote-unquote best team in football, and they couldn't do it. They've already beaten Chicago this year. And New Orleans, well, that'll be the feel-good story of the entire season. Frankly, I'm rooting for it. I want the Patriots to play the Saints. I'm rooting for it, and I think all of football America most likely would be rooting for it. I hope that you're rooting for it. I can understand why you would want the Bears, because you know some of you are kind of like, you know, old grudges are hard to die, and you want a shot at you want a shot at payback from the Super Bowl 20 pounding, you know, 46-10. Okay, that's fine. I can understand that if that's the way you feel, but the Saints are too good a story. It's just too good a story. And I'm thinking that's what will end up transpiring. But at any rate, we're getting ahead of ourselves by a week or two. We are going to spend some time on the program today going through a lot of emails that came through during PFW. If you've got your own emails to send me concerning the game this last Sunday against the Chargers, if you have your thoughts that you wanted to share with me, or you haven't had a chance yet to share your thoughts on the whole LT classless comments, that's fine. I don't have a problem taking that. I realize that it's been a huge topic of debate, not only here on Patriots.com radio, but on sports radio in New England and really on sports radio throughout the country. But if you haven't had the chance or you've, you know, given it some thought and now you're ready to come up with your own opinion, I'm here to take it from you, and I will read it. So here you go. Webradio@Patriots.com. That's the email address, webradio@Patriots.com. And yes, you may also phone today. If you've got to, if you want to converse rather than type, please do so. Pick up the phone and dial 508-543-7482. Again, area code 508-543-7482. And that's how you get in touch with us here on Patriots Playbook. We will hear some of the post-game comments as usually on Tuesdays following a game. What we do is we recap and then look ahead. And we'll probably go pretty much in that order, although we'll do some bouncing around again today simply because of the subject matter and all the different points and certainly the volume of emails that have been coming in, which are great, and I understand why, and I want you to keep them coming because, as I've always said on this program, we read everyone. There are days in which we can't get everyone on the air just because of the sheer number. But we, and I mean the collective we between myself and the PFW guys, we read every one of them. So bring them in. Somebody will read what you have to say. Most of them do make it on the air so everybody else can hear what you've got to say. If it's a particularly good email, I can almost guarantee you it will find a way to get on the air. So, you know, get into your best prose and let's go. Let's hear what you have to say about everything. Let me start at the beginning, which is always a good place to go, I guess. Oh, and also, before I forget, we will hear post-game comments from the game on Sunday from the Patriots locker room. And Brian Lowe from Patriots Video News will join us in the second hour of the show today as well. Actually, in the last half hour of the show today, he will join us. So that's what we've got upcoming because we want to spend the time with you and kind of recapping and moving ahead. But first of all, my own observations on the game. Where I had no expectations. I mean, those of you that listened last week, you know, I said, I believe, 34-31 Chargers in this game. I had no real reason to think that, you know, the game. I was a little hesitant on the number of points. About 65 total points in the game might be a little high, and as it turns out, it's exactly what it was. It was 20 points too high. It was 24-21. So I had 10 points more than either team scored. I guess I didn't give enough credit to the two defenses. The Chargers' defense did impress me, even though they didn't get accomplished what they needed to accomplish in order to win the game. It did impress me. They were better than I originally thought. I had only seen parts of previous games this year and highlights, you know, like you know, on primetime and all that stuff on ESPN. I'd never seen a San Diego football game from start to finish this season, just because, you know, you're always involved with the Pats, and I'm generally involved with the Patriots' opponents. And I'm not privy to a lot of the videotape and the film study, obviously, that the guys and the team down the hallway are. So I'm not unlike a lot of Eastern media You know, you get, you know, what you can when you can get it. And so I have to admit that overall their play impressed me, but I kept waiting. And I kept waiting. And I kept waiting for this vaunted linebacker, Sean Merriman, to make a play that would show he is all that. I didn't see it. I never got it. The Patriots never got it. So I think one of two things. Number one, Sean Merriman is nothing but bluster. Or number two, Patriots offensive line did an extraordinarily good job on him. Which do you think it was? If you feel free to comment on that one, by all means, comment away. As we touched on with the PFW boys a couple of moments ago, I think you got to give credit where some, at least some credit where credit is due. We've hammered Matt Light mostly all season long. And I think you got to give the guy some credit. You're going to hammer one. You also need to credit when they do a good job. And I think the Patriots offensive line did a very, very good job in the ballgame. That being said, they didn't run the ball with beans. But then I think we also saw that the Patriots decided probably midway through the second quarter that running the football was not going to win them the football game. And that's when they decided, you know, to chuck it, and they kept trying different things, and it largely led to Tom Brady throwing 51 passes. I don't think that's the way they want to go every week, but I think on the fly, the Patriots decided to sort of adjust the game plan, and I think the Patriots are the best in the NFL at changing a game plan on the fly and finding things that work. There's no doubt in my mind. They're the best, and that is why they'll win. I think that's why they may be, again, a Super Bowl team again this year. Yeah, absolutely, because they adjust better than anybody I've seen. Certainly, of the four remaining teams, they adjust better than anybody. And we have seen a lot of the Colts, and we have seen a lot of the Bears, a little less of the Saints. But honestly, I've watched a few Saints games this year because of the story that they've been. And I'm a huge Drew Brees fan. And I still think the Chargers screwed up. I think the Chargers win that game on Sunday if they had Drew Brees and didn't have Phillip Rivers. I do believe that. I think Brees is a better quarterback at this stage of his career. That's taking nothing away from Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers will probably develop into a very good quarterback, into an all-pro, year-in, year-out all-pro caliber quarterback. He may, in fact, this was brought up last week at one point, he may end up being as good, if not better, than Tom Brady, physically. Of course, the bottom line will be whether or not he can win like Tom Brady. And his first test, he failed. He failed. I think if Drew Brees had been in this case, been the quarterback of the Chargers, I think he probably pitches the Chargers to a win. That's my thought. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's my thought. Nevertheless, it wasn't Phillip Rivers' fault that the Chargers lost the game. No way. No way. I don't really know that you can hang it on any one or even two people or any one part of the football team that is San Diego. I don't know that that's proper. It was a combination of, I think, several smaller things. Drop passes, yes. The mistakes. I mean, the Patriots' defense and special teams forced San Diego into four miscues, four turnovers. And they only had 15 total turnovers for the entire season in 16 games prior to Sunday. Now, that's extraordinary. A fraction less than one per game. That's a good football team. So I'm not going to take anything away from the Chargers. They are a good football team. But they didn't come through when they needed to come through. And whether or not that's a combination of A, what the Patriots did to them, or B, their, you know, for lack of a better phrase, choking when, you know, the going got tough and they just didn't know how to handle it. I don't know. But maybe going through this experience on Sunday will make them a better team next year if they keep all the pieces in place. You know, and I'm reading in the San Diego papers where a couple of their players are talking about how they're already circling their calendar. Well, first of all, you don't have a date for next year, you dope. So it's kind of hard to circle your calendar. You might want to circle the Patriots as an appointment, or as an opponent, but you don't have a date next year yet. So it's kind of hard to circle your calendar. Dope. Fine. Let them worry about next year. They got all off season to worry about next year. Something tells me they'll get past it. And then, of course, next year when you and I and all of us are in game week before the Chargers come here to Foxborough to play, which they will do next year, and, you know, that'll be the topic of conversation, and it'll be the one regular season game next year that we all really point to. It'll be this year's version of the Colts. We'll all look forward to the San Diego game next year in the regular season, without a doubt. And the Charger players will then pull out, hey, we remember what happened to the playoffs last year, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. You know what? You got all year, all offseason to think about it. Meanwhile, the Patriots have to worry about playing a game this week. Game that the Chargers probably should have been in, but they weren't. One, they turned the ball over. And I've said from day one, this isn't rocket science, folks. Team that turns the ball over most usually loses. And that's what happened on Sunday. They made one too many mistakes. Now, did the Chargers make the mistake or did the Patriots force them into the mistake? And this is where the Patriots' experience and the Patriots' knowing and the Patriots' savvy comes into play. Because the one turnover that really decided the outcome of this game was after the Brady pick, the fumble recovery by McCree, or the fumble by McCree, you know, forced by Troy Brown on the recovery by David Thomas. That was the one. Was it David Thomas? No, it wasn't David Thomas. Who recovered that ball? Was that the one that Thomas got? Okay. The last one. That was the one that made a difference in the game. And I would argue that it was because of the Patriots and what they did affected the play of the Chargers in that one. The other ones, you know, stuff happens, and the Chargers forced three Patriot turnovers on the other end. I mean, three Brady picks. I mean, that's and the Patriots still to win the game, that's pretty extraordinary in its own right. But it's because the Patriots kept hanging around, and they had a chance to steal it on the road. And, you know, if you let the Patriots hang around, they are going to whack you. And that's exactly what happened to the Chargers. The Chargers failed to put the Patriots away. Early because of their own doing, late because they allowed the Patriots to make the play that turned the game around. They had control, and they let the Patriots make the play. I mean, McCree even said something to the effect of, you know, hey, I saw an open field, and hey, I'm going to try to go, and, you know, but see, that's because it's a me-first mentality. He said, well, I saw an open field. I'm thinking score. No, no. You have to know. You got to know before every snap of the football. You got to know what the repercussions of your actions are. These guys do a lot of thinking out on the field. They have to because the game is complicated. It's way too complicated, I think, probably for you or I or anybody else to go out there and pick it up and play it. But this game is complicated. So these guys know on every snap of the football, okay, if I get a shot at it, I got to do this. You know, part of the problem is that sometimes too many guys just react. And because they just react emotionally as well as physically, that's when guys and teams get in trouble. You got to think. You can't be a dumb jock and play football in the 21st century. I don't think at any stage of the game you could be a dumb jock and play football, having played football myself as a dumb jock, quote-unquote dumb jock, some 30 years ago. But I never played it on this level. I was never good enough. Loved the sport. I have lived. I have eaten it. I have breathed it. But I just wasn't blessed like some of these guys are. So I turned my and channel my emotions and my energies on football into doing what I do today. You know, covering it, calling it, that kind of thing. Talking about it. And these guys think a lot. They're intelligent guys. You can't have a dumbass out there to play the game and play it at a high level. It just doesn't work anymore. You might have been able to get by with some slow linemen, you know, 20 or 25 years ago. That's possible. But you could never at any stage get away with a dumb quarterback or a dumb running back or a dumb wide receiver. Can't do it. It's impossible. The way that offenses and defenses have migrated and progressed nowadays, you can't have unintelligent people. And so they're thinking on every play. And, I mean, you had to know. You had to know if you pick the pick it off and force them into a turnover that the game, for the most part, is over. You got an 8-point lead with less than 6 minutes to play. And if you force a turnover and fourth down no less, and you're thinking, I'm going to run it back? What an idiot. What an absolute idiot. That's part of the whole me factor that lost the game for the Chargers. Lost the game. It wasn't Sean Merriman's fault. It wasn't LT's fault, certainly. It wasn't Phillip Rivers' fault. You want to pin it on one person? You can pin it on McCree. Pin it on him. An absolute idiot. You know, so I'm sure Charger fans need a punching bag. Well, there's your punching bag is the way I look at it. You want to blame somebody, blame him. Don't blame Marty Schottenheimer. He equipped them with, I think, everything that they needed to win that game. He can't go out there and block and tackle. He can help, you know, basically influence play calling. I actually think their play calling was fine, with the exception of, as I mentioned to Paul Perrell a little bit ago, there's no way that LaDainian Tomlinson, you know, doesn't have his legs falling off by the end of the game. They got to take him out of the game on a stretcher because I'm riding him all the way. And getting only 9 touches in the second half was an absolute unbelievable course of events. Played right into the Patriots' hands. That's you know, and whether or not that's his call or Cam Cameron's call as the offensive coordinator, well, I don't know. Only those two guys probably know, and that's for Charger fans to sit here and decide and debate into the off season on, because they don't have any time. You know, I mean, they have all the time in the world, rather, to talk about it. The Patriots don't. Patriots have another game to play. So that's my initial comment and reaction. As far as the whole Patriots disrespecting story, okay, I think there's a certain amount of disrespecting your opponent that goes on in every game on every field in the NFL. Every Sunday or every time that there's an NFL game, there's a certain amount of that that goes on. Patriots are not immune, you know, to being human and letting their emotions get the best of them for a brief moment. So if you say the Patriots are guilty, sure, okay. They may have been guilty of something. I mean, let's face it. If the guy that LT was really mad at was Ellis Hobbs, and I believe that that's the guy that he was particularly upset with, well, I think we all realize that Ellis Hobbs is a guy who's pretty emotional. He does a lot of that, you know, chest pounding, you know, and I don't like it. I don't like it. I think Ellis Hobbs can be a good football player. He's not right now. Paul thinks he's nothing but Chris Canty. I think that's a little extreme. He may be Chris Canty with at least a little talent. Chris Canty didn't have talent. You know, he just didn't. And he proved to be overmatched.
Chris Canty's a smart kid.
Yeah, he may be smart, but he didn't have physical ability. So, in that regard, I think that's a little extreme. But I've never liked that. I've never liked players who, you know, get up and yell and scream or pound their chest or whatever over a routine play. I think that's, you know, why we're in the shape we're in a lot of ways, you know, in youth sports in this country to this day, because kids take their cue from the pros. And the pros are all about me, me, me. Look at me. Look at me. Because it's all about, you know, having the cameras on them so they can make more money in some form or fashion. So, you know, the whole dance thing, I mean, I realize that, you know, this isn't the first. I mean, we can go all the way back to the New York Jets sack attack and, you know, all that kind of crap that went on 25 years ago. And it was funny back then because they were the first ones to do it. But it's really, I mean, obviously we've seen it. At least, you know, they would make a big play before they would go off, you know, and do their dance. It's when guys make stops at the line of scrimmage and, you know, or, you know, a 5 or 6 yard out and, or, and I just, that's just nuts. It's just crazy. I don't really have a problem with celebrating when there's something to celebrate. But when there's nothing to celebrate, I think the ground should just open up and swallow the individual who celebrates. I just think the ground should open up and say, okay, you flunk, see ya, ding, you're gone. Because that is in itself is classless. So if you really want to get into classlessness, I think a lot of times I am of the opinion where, you know, when a guy like Sean Merriman may do that, you know, sack dance or whatever it is on an opposing team's field after pulling down the quarterback or what have you, I think that's classless. Play the game. You've been in the league 2 years, and you've been suspended for 4 games because of steroids. Play the freaking game. You know? Who are you? You know, if you can lead the league in sacks for 5 or 6 years in a row, all right, I might cut you some slack. You've been around 2 years, not even 2 full years. And you're already a cheater. Okay? Play the game and shut up. You know, and LaDainian Tomlinson, I think, is still one of the classiest individuals in the league. I'm proud to say that he went to a place like TCU, which is the campus that I grew up 5 minutes from as a kid. And, you know, I went to TCU football games when they were, you know, 1-10, you know, and 3-8, you know, year in and year out. But why? Because it was the thing to do on Saturdays. It was great. Well, it was good seats. Nobody was at the games. So I'm proud that, you know, TCU has some success and they have a spokesperson like him. And in that regard, I'm a little, I don't want to say I'm disappointed, but I would tell LaDainian Tomlinson, I'd say, LaDainian, I think it's time to move on. Don't let this eat you up in the off season. Don't let it eat you up for another day. It is what it is. That's a great saying, by the way, isn't it? I'm glad that Bill Belichick brought that into our vernacular here.
It is what it is.
I'm very happy with that because it's very true. It is what it is. There's no real explanation needed and none offered. It is what it is. Move on. Move on. You know, whether the Patriots started it, I'm sure that it was just, that was pure emotion on Ellis Hobbs's part, on Rashay Caldwell's part, anybody who was out there on the field that might have been doing that. I didn't see it, so I don't know. But I'm sure it was just emotion because Roosevelt Colvin did go out of his way to try to balance this thing out and point out, hey, they were woofing the whole game to the point where Philip Rivers was woofing. Hey, dude, I don't even know your name. And Roosevelt Colvin is just, yeah, shaking his head like, okay, you're going to learn it before the day's over, pal. You're going to know my name. You're going to know my number. You're going to see it in your sleep. I'll let my actions speak for myself. Well, who's playing this week and who's sitting home? You know, Colvin probably felt the need to point it out that, you know, the Chargers were woofing all day. So all we did at the end of the game was just a natural, you know, physical human emotion based on what we went through the entire game that, hey, wasn't picked up by the TV cameras, wasn't picked up by the radio sound, and wasn't picked up by anybody there in attendance. Because you don't know what players are saying to each other out there on the field. You don't know unless you're out there on the field yourself. And I find that a plausible scenario. Okay, maybe they were woofing the whole game. That's great. And so, you know, hey, you finally shut up the team that was woofing. And so you do a little exulting, and LT gets pissed off because of it. Okay, you know what? Guys, it's time to move on now. Are the Patriots guilty? Yeah, probably. Are they just as bad as anybody else? Yeah, sure. They do carry themselves, for the most part, better than other teams. For the most part. But they are not immune to the same problems that are permeating teams throughout the NFL and throughout professional sports at large. There's too much me, me, me. And the one thing that the Patriots have been able to do, better than other teams, they're not perfect, but they've been able to do it better than other teams, is create the team attitude. Create the whole no I in team thing going on. Shut down the locker room and tell the rookies to shut up and not allow them access to the media and things like that. Okay? And that probably, in a sense, got a little out of hand on Sunday. So, okay. You chalk it up to human emotion, getting the best of you for a brief moment in time, and you move on. Patriots are going to move on. Chargers need to do the same. The longer it keeps lasting will be the longer we, you know, have, you know, our respect will continue to erode for guys like LaDainian Tomlinson. That's basically how I look at it. If you want to offer your 2 cents worth, you can do that. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We'll go over some individual things inside the game. I always, you know, do our nitpicking and such on Tuesdays, and we'll get to picking some nits here with you in a couple of moments. Let me get into some of these emails that came a little bit earlier that look like they certainly are good enough to read, and we'll start with that today. And like I said, your fresh emails are definitely welcome at this point in time. So bring them on. Bring them on. Scott is one of our emailers, and he says, at no point during the game did I feel like the Patriots were in control or win the game. Did I feel like the Patriots were in control or going to win the game? He says San Diego lost the game in a number of ways. One, bad penalties. Well, that's a given. And I'm glad you brought this up, Scott, because that was one thing that I have on my list here that I hadn't yet gotten to. But, you know, we'll read your email and let you get the credit for it here. the penalties that the Chargers made were the most unbelievably stupid penalties that I've seen in a long, long time. And whether or not that starts with a coach, I don't know. Bad coaching, going for it on fourth down, losing the turnover on the challenge. Yeah, that was a poor challenge. If you want to blame Marty Schottenheimer for some of the challenge on the that was bad. That was bad. And then bad sack, taking them out of field goal range. Yes, the list could go on. On top of all that, they still had a chance to tie or win the game on the last drive. However, an ineffective 2-minute drill at the end of the game failed to get them into field goal range. The San Diego offense should have managed two or three more plays on the last drive. Rivers took too long to run the plays and then failed to use the sidelines to stop the clock or spike the ball when it wasn't possible. I think this is a case where Rivers' inexperience hurt the Chargers. Okay, I'll agree with that to a point. I think the only thing they could have done was run one more play from the, what was it, the 37-yard line? 36-yard line? I think they could, yeah, 36-yard line. I think they could have run one more with 8 seconds left. I don't really have a problem with them going over the middle because they knew that was where they were going to pick up their most yardage. So I think that they could have run one more play with 8 seconds left. They could have thrown, you know, a 6 yard out, you know, one of those Jabbar Gaffney specials, and seen if it was open. And if not, throw the ball away and then take another chance, because what were you going to lose? All you need is one tick on the clock left. So you had 7 seconds to play with. And I think if you really want to criticize anybody, well, then criticize the decision. If it was Schottenheimer's, well, then criticize him for that. That was really, I thought, the only bad coaching move of the game. You know, you're going to throw the red flag out. Well, you know, okay, I can understand why you'd want to do that, but you probably need a better look at the replay before you throw that flag out, because you would certainly have liked to have had one timeout on that last drive, and that did hurt you. But, again, hindsight's 20/20 here. You don't know at the time. I mean, at the time, you have, what, an eight-point lead. You didn't think you're going to need that last timeout. That's really the only thing I can find fault with in the last few minutes of the game, was the Chargers, I think, should have run one more play with 8 seconds left, just to have a shot to scoot, you know, Kading a little bit closer, because I think we all saw, even though his field goal was wide right, it was short by about 5 yards. So he needed a shot at a 50-yarder. Shot at a 50-yarder, it would have been right there. Could have been right there, maybe hit the crossbar, gone either way. Anyway. A nitpicking here, but yeah. Let's see. I got to figure out which ones we left off with. Well, Gary, all the ones that are still solid, I would assume, or the ones that aren't solid are the ones that have not been read. We'll figure this out here in a second. Gary, all the emails that are still dark are those ones that have not been read?
All emails still there.
Oh, still here, have not been read. All right. So apparently they were glanced at but not read yet. Okay. All right, let's go to the phones at 508-543-7482. John is in Texas. John, welcome to Patriots Playbook.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I've got your on my computer here.
Excellent.
So I'd like to make a comment, not so much about the game, but about San Diego's strength of schedule throughout the year.
Okay.
If you look back at it, it really was not a difficult schedule other than the teams that they play within their own division. Because Baltimore beat them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other loss they had was Kansas City. But they played teams like Oakland. They played Tennessee beginning of the year. You know, Tennessee wasn't playing that well beginning of the year. They played the Raiders.
Yep.
The 49ers. So the schedule wasn't that tough. And I'm not saying that the team was overrated. I think San Diego is a very good team. But I think they met their match on Sunday.
Yeah,
they haven't played. They didn't play a team, with the exception of the Broncos, because the Broncos scare me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think they scare all Patriot fans.
Mm-hmm.
But other than the Broncos, you know, I don't think they met a team all year like the Patriots. And I think they were just shocked by it.
Well, there's probably some truth to that, John. But the Patriots also played a very similar schedule in terms of overall relative strength. I don't think either team really had an advantage because of I think you can give the Chargers a slight advantage, in fact, of their strength of schedule, because having to play two games within their division, you can make a case, I think, for the AFC West being the strongest division top to bottom in football, and
Absolutely.
That includes the Raiders. So
yeah, right.
I think you can make that case this year. But the AFC East, frankly, was not far behind. The AFC East was a lot stronger division than a lot of people wanted to give it credit.
You're right.
So I kind of think it was a wash. So I think the Patriots might have caught them by surprise from some of the physical nature of the game. I think the Chargers believed in a lot of their hype. And I think part of that is because we saw a lack of effectiveness, really, you know, from guys like Phillips and Merriman and Castillo, who mm-hmm. never really got a chance to get into the backfield and disrupt Tom. And I don't know if it's so much what they decided they wanted to do game plan-wise as a point where the Patriots just seemed to have a body at all times. You know, back there protecting them, whether or not it was a lineman or it was Kevin Faulk, who ended up playing running back a lot of the game because of the way that they decided to kind of do away with a run. I think it was pretty easy to see that Falk was going to get the most time back there because he was the best pass catcher that they had.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think the Patriots game planned well, and then I think they adjusted well on Wednesday more than anything. I mean, on Sunday, and I think more than anything else, that was really the difference in the ball game.
I think you're right, and I think probably San Diego probably looked at the Miami tape.
Yes.
And I think Belichick looked back at the Miami tape.
Yes.
And figured, okay, we're not going to let that happen again.
I agree with John. No, I agree with you. I believe that, you know, in hindsight, that Miami game is going to turn out to be a huge blessing in disguise.
Exactly.
Because it really showed the Patriots at a bad moment. And so the Patriots decided, you know what, we're not going to let this game beat us twice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're also going to learn from that Miami game when, admittedly, we played as bad as we played in a long time. And we hope, and we should hope, that teams will take that and try to do to us what Miami did because we're going to be ready for it.
Exactly.
And I think that's part of what happened on Sunday.
I think you're right. And, you know, Belichick is probably, you know, he's the best schemer in the game. And, you know, I tried to email you guys on an article that was in yesterday's San Diego Union newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer had mentioned, I'm not sure if this was poor sportsmanship, but the point he was trying to make was he said that the Patriot players were inferior players.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of missed me a little, because if you look back, you know, to 2001, you know, the Patriots have never gone into a game, a playoff game, being a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't go into this game being a favorite. And to say that the Patriots were having inferior players, I don't think, you know, the writer was probably making a point, you know, match up, you know, player to player. You know, San Diego had better players.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go into a game like that, in any sport, it's a team sport. It
yep.
doesn't matter whether you've got individual better players, or you've got nine players going to a Pro Bowl game.
I really,
it's the way the team plays.
I agree with that, John. And I really think that more than anything else was the Patriots' inner motivation on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, how in the world could we only have one Pro Bowl representative and those guys have nine?
Exactly.
They are not nine times better than we are.
Exactly.
And I really think that the Chargers should have been concerned with that. And obviously, they weren't terribly concerned. Because I don't want to say I saw a lack of effort. I didn't see the emotion in their play that I saw from New England.
I think it took us for granted.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I do not disagree with that at all. I think that there was a certain amount of that until late in the game when it was too late to really do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the Chargers probably felt like all along they were going to win the game, and that's fine, because I don't think they would have woofed as much as they apparently did, according to Rosie Colvin. I think, you know, if they had really had concern, I think they probably would have shut their mouths and tried to play.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, you don't get anywhere by woofing. You just don't. I tell that to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I tell that to anybody who will listen on talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell it to you and anybody else who's listening here today. You don't get anywhere by woofing. I understand why players do it, because, you know, you like to get in their heads and get them off of what they need to be thinking about, which is whipping your ass.
Right.
That's what they need to be thinking about.
Right.
But that's why guys do it. And the best thing to do is just to listen and let your actions on the field speak for themselves.
That's what football is all about.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And this goes back 30 years when I was playing the game, you know, at the junior high and high school level, all right? You know, nobody, I mean, back then trash talk was kind of like, you know, well, you took care of trash talk one way, okay? And when the guy had his helmet off, you went up to him and you socked him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you took care of it. And if
right.
it got you thrown out, you didn't care. That's about as old school as you can get. I mean, talk to somebody, you know, who played in the 1960s about, you know, how you took care of someone who said something to you.
Well,
you took off your helmet, and he took off his helmet, and you settled it like men right there.
Right. Well, Sean Merriman made, I think, the verbal mistake when, I think it was halftime, when the Pats were playing the Jets, and he called the game. He said the Jets are going to beat the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
He called that at halftime. He started it. Back when they were playing the Jets. I mean, he started the taunting. And he apologized on NFL Network
mm-hmm.
for making that statement. But, you know, of course, after the Patriots beat the Jets.
Well, all you have to do is let it get out once. And there's really no, you can't cover anything up.
That's right.
Okay? This day and age will not let you cover up a mistake.
Right.
You can't cover up a pimple with, you know, face cream. You can't do it. A zit is a zit. And when it gets out, it gets out.
It is what it is. is.
That's exactly. Hey, funny how we get back to that saying again, isn't it? Because it's so appropriate.
And by the way, there are a lot of we're looking forward to the Patriots coming down here next year because they're coming to Dallas.
Right, yeah, I know. I personally had wished the Cowboys were coming here, but I think it's still great they're going to end up
and
in Dallas.
And there are a lot of people in from Boston. You go to a baseball game down here,
yep.
A Texas Rangers game,
right.
and a Red Sox game,
mm-hmm.
there are more fans from Boston down here than Dallas.
That's the way it is everywhere. Are you in Dallas?
I'm in Dallas.
Okay, all right. I'm originally from Fort Worth, so I know.
Yeah, the Fort Worth side, actually, not too far from TCU, where LaDainian Tomlinson went to school.
Right, that's where I grew up.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh.
I grew up in the southwest part of Fort Worth, 5 minutes from the campus.
Okay, well, you know the area then.
Know it well.
You know the area.
Well, my parents are still there, so... You're still there.
But that's the game down here with Dallas. There'll be a lot of Patriots fans down here.
Some of them might even be my family. So
there you go. But anyway, I'm going to make a pick, and I'll let you go.
Thanks, John. Go ahead.
I'm going to pick the Patriots to win.
Okay.
Because I'm so diehard. And by the way, my wife is upset with me because we got invited to a wedding Saturday.
Oh, God.
I didn't go.
Ah!
That's how diehard I am.
You're the man.
I didn't go. I sat in the house, watched all four games.
Nice. Nice.
All weekend long. That was it.
Hey, yes, you get a standing ovation.
I'm still married.
Oh, see? Bonus. You're just going to have to sleep in the other room for a week or two.
There
but,
you go.
But hey, good for you. Congratulations on that one.
Thank you very much.
Nice job, John.
And enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
Thanks for calling. Good to talk to you. Let me get a 508-543-7482, the telephone number. If you want to call, you may do so. Great to hear from him. Pratt in Germantown, Maryland says, let me tell you guys, before, during, and even towards the end of the game, I felt like the whole world except Boomer Esiason was against the Pats. First off, they were supposedly going on the road to play in a hostile environment against the best team in football. Bottom line is, we were against all odds, even Jim Nance and Phil Sims, he says, clearly wanted the Chargers to win. I don't know about that, but I can understand why you would say that. Just like they wanted the Broncos to beat them last year. Well, I'm not sure. Those guys actually did as good a job of playing it down the middle as possible. All you do is you let the teams and their respective way that they've reached that game speak for itself. And so maybe it just seemed like it. Maybe. Maybe. Even when the Patriots on offense, they mentioned Merriman being shut down, but they still made it sound like the Chargers were the better team and that they deserved to win. He says down here, we whipped the New England Patriots. He said, maybe more. What goes around comes around. You burn out lightning bolts bulbs. All right. Pratt's letting some of his emotions get out, I think, there. Thanks, Pratt. Michael is with us from Florida. Michael, you're inside the Patriots playbook. How are you?
Hi. Nice to talk to you today. First time caller.
Well, I'm glad you took the time. Thanks.
I've really enjoyed your show. You've said a lot of very intelligent things, I think.
I try. Every once in a while we have
first
a
for everything.
Yeah, there's a first time for everything, sure.
One of the comments I wanted to make was, I haven't heard anybody say anything about it, LaDainian Tomlinson made a great run, and unfortunately none of the officials saw it, but there was actually a lineman that actually was literally hugging Bruschi, like from behind. And it was like, how could he miss that call?
Yeah, I think I remember exactly what you're talking. I think I remember what you're talking about. And here's my answer to that. The officials aren't going to see everything. And I would also say on top of that, and I think you just have to realize there are a certain number of plays and penalties that could be called that don't get called because you just can't have every set of eyes everywhere at any given moment. That being said, I also believe that if you really wanted to call it, you could call holding on every snap from scrimmage.
Oh, I agree. Did you see the first ball that was caught? That they weren't sure whether he had caught it, but it actually turned out to be a fumble.
Yes, and I disagree with that. But then again, when they re-ran it, I could see where it was an incomplete pass. So I didn't have any problem with them overruling it because it. But see, here's the problem. You know, this is the double-edged sword that you deal with in terms of replay. I think that the game got to be as good as it got because you did have that human element, you know, involved. And the official's trying to do his best job to interpret whether or not a catch is made or a fumble is fumbled or a ball is incomplete. When you slow it down to the point where you see every minute frame, well, sure, anybody can make the call. So, you know.
And I also agree with you about the whole emotional release of that game, because the way I look at it, that game was a lot about field position. I mean, that defense, as great as Tomlinson is, that defense, even though they gave up three touchdowns, they had to constantly defend their goalposts the whole game. And it seemed like having to do that the whole game and then finally to suck it out in the end, it must have been such an emotional release after holding them that many times in the in bad field position.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Obviously I want the Patriots to win because I'm a diehard fan, but I was thinking that, you know, Peyton Manning, the only way that he comes out of this thing okay is if they beat the Patriots and then beat Chicago, because if he loses to Brady, he'll probably never live that down in Indianapolis. And then if he goes and faces New Orleans, right, he's going to be playing his dad's old team, and then nobody's going to want him to win in New Orleans. So either way, he's kind of dug in there. But I wanted to thank you for letting me call you, and I appreciate everything you're doing today.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time. No doubt about that. I'm glad that you listen. And please know that, hey, anytime you want to talk a little football, either pick up the phone or send us an email.
Okay, well, have a great day.
You got it. Thanks for the call. 508-543-7482. It's as simple as that. Our friend Jim in Antarctica says, I agree with the comment that the Pats don't have a lot of Troy Browns in the locker room, that the roster is loaded with ego guys like Colvin. Not that I'm bashing the guys who have egos. Cockiness and bravado can and do pay dividends in big games. But if the Pats do have and are going to have guys with egos, do you think Pioli and Belichick might step up in the offseason and sign or trade for an ego guy like a Chad Johnson or a Sean Merriman type of playmaker? I'm a 40-plus year Pats fan, and I'm enjoying the extended run of success. So after many lean years and heartbreaks, I do get frustrated sometimes when I see Pioli and Belichick pass on grabbing a Keyshawn Johnson or a Dante Stallworth type guy to fill a need. Except for stepping up to grab Colvin and Harrison in free agency and trading for Dillon 3 years ago and Sale on a lark, Pioli and Belichick have been letting free agents leave without aggressively addressing roster needs. I would agree with that in large part, Jim. Because I think that they first look at guys that are quote-unquote character guys or quote-unquote guys that might have something still to prove. That's how this whole six-year run has been built, based on guys that have a chip on the shoulder, or have a boulder on the shoulder, as I like to say, and feel like they have something to prove and are willing to go out and prove it on the field and let their actions speak for themselves. That's how they've done this. And so that's why they put a price tag on guys. When guys exceed that price tag, they let them go. They might have some ability left, but this is a model that they are building. And if the model, it's a house of cards in pro sports, because you have a salary cap, and eventually all things do come tumbling down. And so you try not to let this house of cards get built too tall, because why? Because the foundation is going to crumble. So that's why they allow some of these guys to move on, like Adam Vinatieri, unfortunately. Like David Gibbons, like Deion Branch, because it's not a part of the model. You have to have faith that the model will continue to work. I feel like you, Jim, like typical fans, I would love to see them go out, and I hope they go out and get the guy Briggs from Chicago. I think that's going to be the one free agent off-season move that the Patriots could really, really improve themselves on, and I think that if it fits into their numbers, that there's no doubt in my mind they should do that, because I think they're going to need the help at linebacker. I mean, who knows if Sale will come back? I hope he does. I think he's got some ability left. But if you put him and Teddy Bruschi back side by side, how many years do those guys have left? You need to look to the future. You need to look to 3 and 4 down years down the road. And if you're going to continue this six-year run of success for another 3 or 4 years, these are the kind of moves that you need to be concerned with. So in one regard, I am willing to, let them stay the course. In another, I think, there are some players that become available that they should definitely take a look at. Robin says, I've been thinking, and this is what popped in there. Oh, God. Should we be careful here, Robin? Football is blood and guts. Our minds, fed by NFL films, want to make football poetic. But the reality is that this sport is brutal. Football isn't war, and it is moronic to hold players as heroes or warriors in that sense. Although football is not ballroom dancing as much as Emmett Smith and Jerry would have loved it to be Loved it to be. Just kidding. Football players are nasty. Off the field, we want them to be white knights that give to charities, and most players do their best to take that role. On the field, modern-day players will do everything they can to win, everything you can get away with, short of consciously trying to injure a man. If something is illegal but it isn't getting called by the refs, you can bet players will keep doing it, just like we talked about. Hey, there's holding on every play. But isn't or wasn't it always that way? Club hands anyone? Modern football is brutal, but it doesn't compare to what it was. Ditka should know better than to talk about class, being a former player and from an era that was much more blood and guts than jacked-up highlight reels. I would agree that Mike Ditka should know better. I totally agree with that. No one should be surprised when emotions run high and the true nature of the sport is exposed. This entire LT versus the Patriots frenzy is a non-story. Should be a non-story. Every player gives it, and every player gets it. Fans and the media should stop fooling themselves to the contrary. This is Robin in Alaska. Excellent, excellent email. Ken is listening in West Lafayette, Indiana, and he's inside the playbook. Hello, Ken.
Hi, John.
How are
you? Thanks for having me on.
Hey,
good,
thanks
good.
For calling. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I appreciate your show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Let's see. I was just calling about just the coaching of Schottenheimer and you know, just some of the decisions he made. For example, the 4th and 11, and they're on their own 30. And I actually was at the game, and there wasn't that much wind. I just don't understand why he would not want to go for a field goal at that point in time.
Okay, let's start back at the beginning again. Let me see if I can let this soak in for a minute. Say it again.
Sure. When the Chargers had the ball, they had it in 4th and 11,
right,
on their own 30-yard.
Oh, early
line.
In the game, you're talking about. Yes,
early
yes, yes.
In the
okay.
Game,
yes.
Early in the game.
Yeah.
And they went for it on 4th and 11.
Mm-hmm.
When they have the Pro Bowl kicker, and I was at the game.
Yeah.
It wasn't that windy. I just don't know why they didn't go for a field goal at that point in time. I mean, and he said in the press conference that his offensive coordinator had a play that they thought they'd be able to get a first down on 4th and 11.
Okay.
And I don't know many teams that have a play that they can sit and get when they need third down and they need 10 yards.
Okay.
So he went for 4th and 11. I just thought that was just a bad play.
Yeah, I think I would have to agree with you. I think that was also a bad play. And I'm thinking at the time when that play took place, I was sort of ambivalent about it, I'll be honest. But certainly, you know, hindsight being what it is, obviously it was a stupid, stupid move. And with further thought at that particular play, you know, you took the ball out of the hands from a proven performer. And in a playoff game where you feel like, you know, or you should feel like that, you know, hey, one play may make the difference in a game, you probably want to put up every point that you can. Because, you know, there's, you know, two things that, you know, can happen, or at least one big thing that can happen when you go for it in 4th and 11. You don't make it, you turn the ball over, and you don't get a shot at the points. So, obviously, that was a bonehead play. That was a wrong play, but apparently, and I can only surmise based on what was said after the game, that Cameron talked Marty into running the play. And so Marty's biggest criticism, I think, from most fans and most media people are that, you know, he stuck his, you know, mouth and his foot in where he shouldn't have, and he didn't let the guys he brought in do the coaching. This may have been an instance of, you know what, against my better judgment, you know, if Cam says we can get it, I'm going to let him have a shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out to haunt him in the end. So I don't think we can have it both ways here if you look at it from the San Diego perspective. I think what you have to realize is that, you know, this wasn't necessarily Schottenheimer's fault, although he was the head coach, is still the head coach, and obviously the bottom line has to fall with him. But I don't blame them for trying it because he tries to have faith in his assistants. I also think the second thing on this play is that this kind of alludes to what we were talking about a little while ago. That I think that the Chargers didn't have the ultimate respect for the Patriots going in. I think they all thought that they would win and probably win rather easily, and that they would get another chance if by some chance this didn't work.
Good point.
That's what I think. And I think throughout the course of that game, as the game wore on, I think the Chargers realized that every time they took a swing, the Patriots were right there standing and taking it and then dishing it right back. And that all goes with, you know, allowing a team to hang around. I do think top to bottom, I think the Chargers are the better football team physically. Okay? I think they have a very good football team. And I'm not going to take anything away from their pure football talent. But the Patriots know how to win a game like that. The Chargers are immature when it comes to football games like that. Maybe they learned, but we're not going to know until next year.
It was really impressive how their offensive line, when they every time LaDainian Tomlinson got the ball, I mean, I was fearful that he was going to break one every time he had the ball.
Yep. And the one time he did break it on the screen pass was due because he juked Artrell Hawkins right out of his jock strap.
Yeah.
You know?
One other thing I want to address is just I was really impressed with how the defensive backs played. I mean, it seemed like every time that somebody on the Chargers did catch the ball, they did seem to try to really want to inflict as much pain as possible.
Yeah, I was going to say that I thought, you know, I've been a big critic of the Patriots' poor tackling defensively all season long, particularly from the secondary. And I thought that there was a much better job of tackling done this week with only maybe two or three minor exceptions, one of them being Hawkins being juked out of his jock.
Yeah.
But that's the most blatant one that I can recall. But for the most part, they did a better job, so I'm guessing that they probably worked on it some, you would think. No problems with that. If they tackle, for the most part, like that this week against Indianapolis, I think that they'll certainly have an opportunity to win the football game. I will tell you that, you know, routes to the middle of the field involving, Marvin Harrison and Dallas Clark in particular, that's what concerns, and Reggie Wayne, I got to throw him in there too. That concerns me about this week. I'm not so much concerned about the sideline routes as I am routes up the middle of the field against the Pats secondary this week.
Well, one last thing. What do you think of, there was an article in the Boston Herald today about the Colts, not selling tickets online for Patriots fans.
Right, right.
And, I'm not sure if you read that article.
I did,
but
I saw it.
Okay, and I actually recorded what they were talking about in the article, how Manning requested from the Colts fans not to sell their tickets to Patriots fans.
Yep, I saw that too.
Oh, you saw the piece on that?
Yep.
Okay, and I recorded that, and it was just funny because, you know, the person that asked him the question said, well, who do you want to play in the AFC Championship game? And Manning didn't say anything, but he did say, if we're going to play at home, you know, I really appreciate it if Colts fans don't, you know, if they don't sell their tickets to Patriots fans. And, I just can't see Tom Brady ever saying something like that.
I would tell you that, first of all, I think Tom Brady would say whatever the Patriots want him to say. And so my guess is that this is something that the Colts asked Peyton Manning to do because they want to ensure that they have as solid a home crowd as you can possibly get. I don't have a problem with that from a Colts perspective because you do anything you can to build up your home field advantage. And you know Peyton Manning's going to do whatever the team asks him to do. So I don't really have a problem with that. I think it's a little cheesy. If they really are that concerned about Patriots fans getting in there, then they're not concerned about the football game. So that's why I don't have a problem with them doing it, because it puts their attention elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the Colts don't want to sell the Patriots tickets, you know, to pay or sell tickets to the game to Pats fans, I think that's also a little bit cheesy, but the Colts have every right to do that as an organization. Because it's their home field. They earned the advantage. You know what? You know, frankly, I think I'd say the same thing about the Patriots if the Patriots had the home field. But you know what? The Patriots have long had a policy since Bob Kraft bought this team to sell tickets to anybody as long as they have them available. And the problem here is that they've never had them available. They've sold out 138 or whatever it is in a row now. So they've never had to have that problem, but they've never refused either. They've never refused to sell them to anybody regardless of who they root for.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the difference between the organizations. Other organizations feel differently. That's fine. Other organizations certainly have not been as successful as New England. Game, set, match.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the phone call. You got it. See, it's that easy. By the way, I saw that on YouTube. Somebody had downloaded and put it on YouTube, the Manning thing. So that's where I saw it. I think it was YouTube. I don't remember specifically now. Somebody emailed it to me last night. And I know they were talking about it on EEI today, so I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. So.
Trips right, 255, X-block slant, H-disco, alert 12 trap. No, alert 14 Billy.
Alert 14 Billy. Alert 14 Billy. Love that stuff. Oh, that's good stuff. All right, here we go. Let's see. I'm going to try now because we've gotten so many emails that have begun to come in. Looking forward to the Colts game, then I'm gonna pick and choose some of these. First of all, we welcome you. It's hour number two already of Patriots Playbook. This program, like I knew it would, is absolutely flown by to this stage of the game. Brian Lowe from Patriots Video News will be here a little bit later on in this hour. So with all due respect to the interviews that we have, Gary, I'm going to just plow through with emails for the time being because these are the folks that want to have their opinions heard. So we're going to let your opinion be heard here with the emails or the telephone call here today. The sound that we have from the locker room, chances are you've probably heard it somewhere already anyway.
We may be able to get to it tomorrow.
We also have some idea. Yeah, we can also get it for you tomorrow because I don't want to disrespect the San Diego game because it was, I think, one of the...
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
Thank you, Gary. By the way, might I say that your open today for PFW was excellent. I laughed when I heard it. I was listening online from my home office today. I'm laughing through the whole thing, so that's good stuff. I think that the San Diego game overall was one of the great moments in Patriots history. I do. I don't think I'm soft-selling that. I think that, you know, other than certainly a championship-caliber game, either AFC championship or a Super Bowl game, I think it was one of the greatest games in Patriots history because of the circumstances surrounding the game, the fact that you're going to a team that physically may have been, you know, a little bit more talented than you, and the way that you went about winning the game when you really didn't play with your absolute 110% best effort. I mean, you turned the ball over three times. They did a good job, I think, penalties. They did only an adequate job moving the football, but, you know, they knew that they weren't going to be able to move the football early in the game, so they chucked it. They adjusted the game plan, and they let Brady wing it, and they ended up winning. So when you add all this stuff together, I think it was an outstanding game and one that we should be talking about and deserves a special place in the annals of Patriot football history and over the last 47 years. And so we definitely will pay homage to it at the proper time. But I do want to move on to some other particular emails simply because a lot of you took the time to send them, and a lot of you sent some unbelievable, some real long ones here. Let me suggest to you at this stage of the game and at this stage of the season, I know that everybody wants to get their 2 cents worth off their chest. So if you haven't done so and you're thinking about doing so, short, sweet, and to the point. As I tell my journalism students, KISS. You know what KISS stands for?
Keep it simple, stupid.
There you go. Keep it simple, stupid. And you'll have a better shot of getting ready.
Yeah, you also told your kids not to woof, but to smack someone in the mouth. I think
that's No, I never told my kids to smack somebody in the mouth. That's only something that I would do. But that's good. Line of the day goes to Gradecki. Right, don't woof, just smack him in the mouth. That'll solve a lot of problems. Hand-to-hand combat would just solve a lot of problems. I think we'd have less wars on this planet if we just had the ability to put somebody in front of us and just smack them in the mouth. Oh, goodness. Dennis in Pittsburgh writes, if people want to criticize LT, that's cool. He did go a little overboard, I'll admit. I, for one, like it when players get upset when they lose. Brady is the biggest baby of them all, and we're all pretty big Brady fans. I guess I've seen just too many players smiling away after losing, even in the playoffs. LT should have been mad, and it's not exactly cool to start ripping his teammates for dropping passes, the coaching staff for its blunders, and so forth. Okay, Dennis, thank you. Phil in Austin. Part of the Patriots' offensive game plan was to use three wides in order to get Cromartie on the field. Some draftniks were thinking the Patriots might be looking at him prior to last year's draft. What's your opinion of him before the draft? Is there any chance that Vrabel moves back to outside if TBC gets getting run over on Sunday? No, Vrabel's not going to move back to the outside. He'll stay on the inside. As far as the other question you asked about, honestly, I had no opinion whatsoever. Kiernan in Raleigh, North Carolina. Do you think Caldwell got out of bounds on purpose at the end of the game? Do you think Belichick knew where to go and told him to do so? Think about it. If so, it was a genius move for game clock purposes. No, I don't think he got out of bounds on purpose at the end of the game. I think he would have taken it to the house had he really had the chance to get to the house. Why wouldn't you? You would have scored six instead of a field goal, and you would have put the game out of reach right then. Although, yeah, for game clock purposes, I see exactly your point. And I think this is where dumb luck is better than no luck at all. I think the Patriots realized that once he did get out of bounds and didn't score the touchdown, that what they ended up was with a tremendous advantage where they could massage the clock to their advantage and work as much of it off as they could. And as it turns out, they darn near didn't do it enough. So the only way that you solve that problem is by putting the score to make it more difficult for the Chargers to score. And so I think, in hindsight, yeah, they wish they'd had the touchdown, because then that would have made it 28-21, and the Chargers would have had to go, you know, 80 yards rather than, you know, 50 yards. That's, you know, again, hindsight again, but it's certainly a worthy thought, Kiernan. Michael in Texas. John, how should the Patriots game plan to stop Dallas Clark? I watched the Colts 2 playoff games this year, and he seems to be the guy Manning goes to in critical third down situations. What do you think? Ooh. Well, I did mention, I think, honestly, that I think that that will actually be one of the keys to the ball game, whether or not the Patriots can slow down those routes over the middle that certainly they've been gassed by, you know, the Colts before, Clark being one of those guys. I can only, again, without getting into the X's and O's, I can only surmise that what they'll probably try to do is make sure that he gets, you know, for lack of a better football phrase, punched in the mouth at the line of scrimmage as he comes off it. They may even have somebody in the linebacking corps shadow him in an effort to make sure that he doesn't get loose over the middle and turn, you know, a 5 or 6 yard gain into, you know, 40 or 50. That would be my guess. You can't necessarily do that with cover two, so I'm wondering if that also might be part of the strategy defensively. You know, my guess is also that, you know, Manning is probably thinks that he's seen everything he's going to see from the Patriots. And I would only surmise here that the Patriots will try to throw something in there that Manning hasn't seen a lot of. I don't think you can throw him anything that he hasn't seen at some point, because I think there's just a finite amount of number of things that you can do. Fact is, the Patriots and the Colts have played every year now for the last several. And this year, of course, they will end up facing each other twice. And so here's something that, you know, this is what makes a rivalry great. You know, a rivalry really doesn't become a rivalry until you get a chance to do it against each other in the playoffs. I think that's what really adds the spice to a rivalry. And because we're sort of bereft of real rivalries in the NFL now, not like the old Cowboys-Redskins back of the, you know, 70s and 80s, or the Cowboys-Steelers in the 70s, and maybe Pokes and Redskins of the early 80s, and you know, we just don't have that right now. This can come as close to it as we might get, and part of that is because, you know, now the Colts have proven they can beat the Patriots. It's not a rivalry until, you know, somebody beats you. Then it can become a rivalry. And now that you've got a playoff game where you really have something that means something hanging in the balance here, you know, I think we'll find out what the Colts are made of as well as what the Patriots are made of. So I think you'll, you know, there's going to be a familiarity here, and these two teams are just going to have to line up against each other, and they're going to have to whack each other upside of the head, and we'll see which one is left standing at the end. But I definitely think they'll find a way to put a body on Dallas Clark. You know, whether or not they shadow him or they come up with a different type of formation to throw the nickel back in there a little bit more often. I'm just throwing ideas off the top of my head. I'll have to look at that a little bit more closely, but I'll see if I can't readdress that before the end of the week. Alex in Somerville. John, the question of whether this game was decided by luck has come up quite a bit over the last couple of days. I have a different phrase for the main contributing factor to the Patriots' victory. Situational awareness. This is brought up by Belichick in almost every press conference, and I guess it's just not sexy enough to catch on with the media or the fans. Every quote-unquote lucky opportunity or Charger failure or boneheaded play was taken advantage of by an aware and intelligent Patriots player. Says, thanks for staying classy, Rook. Well, you're welcome, Alex. I didn't know I was going out of my way, but thank you. You know, that's a pretty good point. Alex, that's a pretty good point. Situational awareness. Did McCree have situational awareness when he picked off Brady with an 8-point lead? No, he did not, and I brought that up in the opening hour of the program today. He allowed Troy Brown, freak as it might have been, he allowed Troy the opportunity to slap at the ball, and he got lucky. Or situational awareness proved to be a good point for the Pats because Troy knew, hey, you know, I play a little DB too. I knew what the situation was. I just tried to give my team a chance to make the play, and he did. I think that's a very good point, Alex, and I'm going to champion your cause. Patriots have situational awareness. The Chargers did not. Let's find out how much situational awareness the Colts have. Scott in Washington, Washington, D.C. Regarding the LT situation, here's my take. If one or a couple of Patriots did what LT says they did, and we have no video to confirm but no reason to doubt LT what he saw, what he thinks he saw, then LT is essentially right. The Patriots shouldn't be doing that. Ty Warren had some comments in the Globe today that his teammates should have shown more restraint, and I agree wholeheartedly. I also agree wholeheartedly. Where LT goes wrong, way wrong, is in attributing it to the head coach. Now, when he blames the coach in his postgame comments, okay, maybe that's the heat of the moment. But here we are a couple of days later, and he's still whining the same whine, and hasn't recanted that part of it regarding Belichick. Instead, Tomlinson says he won't talk to Belichick if Belichick ends up coaching him at the Pro Bowl this year, and LT wants to talk about classless? That's downright childish, LT. Once again, Scott, I could not have phrased it any better. The way the media takes these things and runs with them drives me nuts, too. And it isn't LT's fault or any Patriots player's fault. It just is what it is in today's media world. But here's an example of the nonsense I'm complaining about here. An ESPN anchor, not sure which one, was talking with Michael Smith, and the anchor says, after Belichick shoved the cameraman following the Jets game, and now this controversy in San Diego, we're starting to see a pattern here. A pattern? Are you kidding me? Sure, there's a pattern of Belichick apologizing for pushing the cameraman last week and telling the interviewers yesterday that he has nothing but the utmost respect for Tomlinson. In other words, being classy. That's true. I don't know what anchor that was, but that's a stupid question by the anchor. You know, but and unfortunately, knowing some of the anchors as I do, and I won't name names, some of them are intelligent, smart guys. Others are stupid. I'll just leave it at that.
What?
No, that in no way is an indictment on that particular person. Finally, I seem to recall the Chargers having expletive-filled exchange with Foxborough fans when they beat the Patriots last year in New England. And Sean Phillips has the audacity to reference that specific game as an example of how classy the Chargers were on our turf. Way too short a memory, Sean. Now it's time to move on. Let's go get the Colts. Scott, there's a reason why you're one of my favorite emailers, because you make sense every time. You don't fail to bring it every time you write it. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate that. Amir in Boxborough. John, first off, yee-hoo! Boy, am I happy we won that one. I would like to make a comment on two... Yeah, that too. I'd like to make a comment on two historic Patriots plays that our competition can cite our team as lucky. The first is the tuck rule against the Raiders in the Snow Bowl, and the second one is Troy Brown's strip in the Respect Bowl. Oh, so now we're naming this the Respect Bowl? When did this game get a bowl game nod? I was not aware of this. I didn't get the memo on that. Where's the memo?
I thought it was the...
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
Bowl. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it should be. In both cases, the opposing team felt that the Pats were lucky. You know, I'm going to hear that so often that one of these days I'm going to slip and say that. Somebody here on this website is going to slip and say that.
It just says bleep.
Oh, I know. But, I mean, unfortunately, we won't be able to bleep ourselves because we're not on delay here like you are on commercial radio. So, is this like, are we governed by satellite radio rules here?
No, we can pretty much say whatever we want.
Okay. Just wondering.
But we're classy.
We try to be. We try to be. In both cases, the opposing team felt that the Pats were lucky. But this is what luck is about. In both cases, after the play, the other team still had the lead. It was theirs to lose. In the Snow Bowl, Tom, Adam, and so forth had to pull several miraculous plays, not to mention two big kicks in the snow. In this last game, we still needed to score twice. It was the opponent's game to lose in both cases, but the Pats came through. This last game was reminiscent of that 2001 team. They won when things did not go well. Yeah, I'll buy that to an extent, Amir. I'll buy it to an extent. How about the defense? I thought they were great. They made Rivers look like he did not belong in the Pro Bowl. I would also agree with that, Amir. Who is the Pro Bowl quarterback? Who is the Pro Bowl quarterback this last week? Now, I said before the game that I thought Phillip Rivers deserved his nod. I don't think he should have it taken away from him. But I think even though, admittedly, Tom Brady did not have a Pro Bowl caliber year compared to his previous Pro Bowl years, I think it's all fair to see who would rather still have it quarterback, right? The run D was workmanlike and kept us in the game against the best rushing attack in the league. The physical conditioning of the pass showed itself late in the game when the Chargers were gassed. I'm very disappointed in LT. Basically, this is a loser's lament. He is angry because our team dissed his team's sacred celebration dance. Suck it up, you crybaby. Lose the earrings, too. Yeah, I know. I am very surprised at Matt Light's performance. I wish I could see the coach's tape. I think he pancaked Merriman several times. I blamed Light for mistakes earlier in the year, but I tip my hat to him now. Here's an extension to your prediction, John. The winner of the AFC Champ game will win the Super Bowl. Brave words, huh? Well, I said that as well last week to Hank Bauer in particular. He also said the winner of the game would win the Super Bowl. So I hope he's ready to stand now and say the Patriots will win the Super Bowl. I think that we have a good chance against the Colts, but I am concerned about the fatigue factor after a long trip or one less day rest and a physical game. Keep it alive, and I will do so, Amir. Thank you. Ann in Gloucester. Ann says, did anyone film the dance on the bolt at midfield? I wanted to see who, do we know, did the dance, and I want to see it. I don't think so. But I believe that, and I said this a little earlier, Ann, I believe the person whose ire LT was directed toward had to do with Ellis Hobbs in particular. And I know that Rasheed Caldwell was in the area, although I don't know if he was dancing. I think Archer Hawkins was around there, but I don't know if he was dancing. But I think he was most PO'd at Ellis Hobbs. That's all I know. And that's, again, that's what I think happened. All of the coverage I've seen didn't show the dance or say who did it. Also, if we do make it to Miami, I don't want to play the Saints because of the Mystique Katrina year thing they have going on. Everyone outside of New England will be cheering for them, and we don't want that negative juju on us. Okay. I can understand that, and from a purely Patriots perspective, but I think in terms of the Patriots really having that edge on their shoulders, I think that would give them the perfect ingredient for the us against them, us against everybody else. And you know how well they thrive on adversity, Ann. That's why I'm saying I think that the better story would be the Patriots against the Saints. That being said, I think the Bears will win the game anyway. This one comes from Kenny in Sewell, New Jersey. It is always good to win, but I have made it a tradition of only listening to your show during playoffs, so it makes it even better to win and extend listening another week. Thank you, Kenny. That said, what is the latest on Rodney Harrison, and is Bob Sanders healthy enough to play again this week, and how much of a difference will he make in the game since we did see how much he improved that Indy D for the playoffs? Well, we'll know more about Harrison tomorrow. I know Harrison is back in town. I know he went home last week and was never a part of the workouts. I will still be surprised if he plays. I won't count him out. And again, the first injury report tomorrow will dictate that, but you know, whether or not he's out, because he was listed as out early in the week last week. I think, you know, if he has a chance to play at all this season, you know, with the extra week, again, between the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl, should the Patriots win, I think it's more likely, you know, getting three more weeks of rest that he would come for the Super Bowl. It's more likely. But I'm sure if there's a physical possibility, he'll be out there. So we'll just have to wait and see what the injury report says. Bob Sanders, I would say, yeah, he'd have to be healthy enough to play again. And yes, he does make a difference for that Indianapolis defense. I don't think that's going to scare the Patriots one iota. I think they'll come right after him. I think they'll try to run the football, and I think that they'll try to keep the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands. I think that's what you have to do against the Colts. You try to keep the ball out of Manning's hands as much as you possibly can so he can't beat you with those routes up the middle that concern me, concern you, concern the guys down the hallway. So I think, you know, ball control, whether if you're going to go five wide, you can still ball control. You just you want to chew up the clock. You probably want to no huddle. You probably want to throw a lot of different things at them. And that's what I love about this Patriots team. You know, everybody says that this Patriots team doesn't have an identity. They do have an identity. This Patriots team is as versatile as any Patriots team we have seen since this six-year run began in 2001. It's versatile. They can do many different things. And you can't say that. Are they as good as the 2003 or 2004 Patriots teams? No, I actually don't think so. I think the 03 and 04 teams, top to bottom, man-to-man, were probably stronger personnel-wise. But the one thing that this Patriots team does that I don't think either of those teams did as well is change on the fly. These guys can, you know, at the drop of a hat, okay, we're going to do this. They can adjust. This team is good. Maybe we should call them the Chameleon Patriots, because they blend in and do whatever they need to do in order to do it and to get it done. And I think that's what this team does. I think that's the character of this team. They adjust as well as any team I have seen, period. And so I think they'll throw a little of this, they'll throw a little of that. It'll be like, you know, bacon and meatloaf. We're going to throw them a little of this. We're going to throw in a little of that. And we're going to see what comes out. And by the way, I love meatloaf. Meatloaf is comfort food.
The food or the singer?
The food. Oh, I forgot about the singer. Yeah. Never been a meatloaf singer fan. Anyway, he says, let me make this last point clear that I'm half joking since it's hard to perceive in an email. Gostkowski, I should say. You don't pronounce the first K. Gostkowski. Looks good. But do you think the Pats should sign Vanderjagt to make a game-winning kick? No. No.
I think they're ripe for the picking.
Yeah. Remember he said that a few years ago. And I believe in one of the other previous AFC encounters. I think with some Patriots postseason magic, it would be good. Again, I'm joking. Just keep having visions of Vinatieri setting up for a game-winning kick. Yeah, well, that's going to obviously be a problem this week. And I think it's something that Patriots fans should probably prepare themselves for. He'll have a chance to get out there and kick several times. And, yes, may even be positioned to kick the game winner. And if he does, all you can do is congratulate him. Said, hey, you know, we had you at one time. Patriots made a decision to let him go. You hope that it doesn't come back and haunt you. It's all you can do. I think what you probably need to focus on here is giving Gostkowski a chance to kick that kick. Because now that he has one finally under his belt, I certainly feel better about his chances to go out and do it again. Don't you? Absolutely. Okay, this one comes from Rodrigo. John, I'm glad to be listening to you on a Tuesday, not Wednesday, and I have to agree with you on Philip Rivers. Some of the national media have been criticizing him, but he played better than many expected. In my opinion, his receivers failed him. Now, he wasn't without fault, but the receivers choked. Yeah, I think largely, Rodrigo, that the receivers failed to show for San Diego. You want to put it in somebody's hands, put it in their hands, or lack thereof, because they couldn't hold the ball, or put it in McCree's hands, because he didn't have the presence of mind to just knock the ball down. It was fourth down. Fourth down! Jason, I'm from Tampa, Florida, born and raised in Hartford. I'm a diehard Patriots fan. Though this weekend is going to be tough because I love Dungy as a coach and role model. I watched him do some terrific things with this Buccaneers team. Almost three-quarters of the Tampa people believe that Super Bowl was Tony Dungy's, and they are angry about that. He doesn't get the credit. So I'd love to see him win a Super Bowl, but I just can't cheer for them when my Patriots are playing. Tony Dungy has done the same thing with the Colts as he did with the Bucs. Tony Dungy's a very good coach, Jason. It is very hard to root against Tony Dungy. I will certainly give you that. I think he's a very good coach. I know there are a lot of people, and I, for one, would also like to see him eventually win one to help solidify his legacy. But just not this week. The Chargers game was incredible as the Colts stand after watching all those mistakes the Patriots made, yet they still overcame it and won the game against the number one seed in the NFL and AFC, and that would make me think and be very, very nervous. That means even their best game can easily turn to a loss if they allow Brady to have a chance at it. How intimidating is that? The loss the Patriots handed the Chargers shocked the world as much as the nuclear bomb did in 45. Well, that's overstating it a bit, but I see your point. Tomlinson, I believe he was totally out of context. I totally do not agree with the Patriots dancing like they did. He had a right to be upset, but he didn't act like the MVP of the AFC or the NFL this year with his retaliation. Belichick is probably one of the most respectable coaches I have ever seen. Never saw him lose his cool. Never saw him trash another team. In fact, when they win over a team, Bell tells the team that what they did right to gain his respect. He made the introduction at the Super Bowl what it is today. They are announced as a team. He also has benched people on his team for less than what the players did on Sunday. Bill is not the problem. It's the players who were disrespectful and need to be disciplined. Bill has set an example of his respect for teams and the introduction of the Super Bowl, and I totally think Tomlinson needs to take that back. Jason, thank you. Howard, our friend in Orange, Connecticut. Pardon me for a second.
You're talking so much you need water.
I needed to wet the palate. John, good to have you back for another week. Glad to be back, Howard. San Diego game was an ugly game, but a good one, obviously, because the Pats won. My 34-31 prediction was obviously off as it turned into a tougher defensive struggle than I anticipated. The Patriots may have been outplayed for the most of the game, but at the end of the day, they made more key plays than did the Chargers, and in today's NFL, the difference between a win and a loss can be as little as one play and which team makes it. On Sunday, the Patriots made the plays when it counted, and that is why they won the game. As for the LT thing, sour grapes of an insecure, immature young man. I understand he was probably completely distraught over the loss of having performed as well as he did, hence why I had no problem with the initial after-the-game comments. Nor did I, Howard, and that's the point I tried to make in the opening hour of the program. I didn't have a problem with that, but it's when you let it go a day after, and a day after that, dude, it's time to move on. What has transpired since is just immaturity raising its ugly head. He needs to look no further than his team to see a lack of class, like Merriman's dance and use of steroids, which is nothing less than cheating. Does this mean cheating and a lack of class starts with Marty Schottenheimer? According to LT's logic, it must, since he believes Coach Belichick is responsible for every action of his players in the celebration after a hard-fought win. Moving on. It's payback time as the Pats travel to Indy. I think this game is going to be harder than some are making it out to be. Like last week, I think this one will be a high-scoring affair. However, I honestly believe it will not be Adam or the rookie who decide this one. I think it will be either Brady or Manning who decide this one by making one more mistake than the other. That's a good point. Pats D will really need to step up in this one and contain a very powerful Indy O. Conversely, the Patriots O will need to do a better job than they did earlier this season. No doubt about that. He says, the Pats, the better team, and the better team will win on Sunday. Look forward to the remainder of the week and listening to the rest of the opinions out there, which hopefully will make the time go by quicker. The wait is the killer. Well, that's the truth, Howard. I'm ready to play now. Can we move on with it? Let's get on with it here. Here we go. John Rook. This one comes from, I think this is our friend Al. Yep, in Valdosta, Georgia. Hello, Al. Tom Brady appears to have a promising career in politics. Rather than more bluntly classify Sunday's win as lucky, Brady instead chose the word opportunistic. It's pretty impressive stuff. It's true. What was the saying that we said we were going to use? Oh, yeah, situational awareness. Thank you, Alex. Glad we left that one up there. Patriots have more situational awareness than anybody else right now. We got a bunch of breaks in the second half, also created a couple. The play by Troy Brown was brilliant.
Brilliant.
Do you have that soundbite, by the way, from that commercial somewhere?
No.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Go. Yes, exactly. That's pretty impressive stuff. The man is a Patriot Hall of Famer and a Pro Football Hall of Famer from the neck up. Fans aren't stupid. They pick out their fan favorites for a reason. It's because some guys can just play. It was only an athletic ability. Every 4 years, the winner of the Olympic decathlon would sign a huge deal with an NFL team. Come to think of it, Jim Thorpe was pretty good. That's a good point, Al. Next week, I think we win. We will play the Saints. Brady is undefeated in domes, and I can't wait to see Lawrence Maroney run wild on the pool table carpeting. As for the Colts, evidently this guy at safety is Bob Sanders. Must be the most singularly valuable defensive player in the league. When he's healthy, the Colts can stop just about anyone in the NFL playoffs. When he's not, the Colts can't even stop Division II playoff regular Valdosta State. They're not going to play in a dome, though, against the Saints. I think you're thinking they'll go to the Superdome, but playing in Miami for the Super Bowl. Thanks, Al. Don't be a stranger. Gabe in Travose, Pennsylvania. John, welcome back for at least one more week. Gabe, glad to be here. Glad you're back. Quick hits for you. And Gabe says, 1, Matt Light was lights out on number 56. Also, Cashier stood tall when Royd Boy flipped to his side. I've been too hard on Light all year, and I can admit it. Also, Light saved the strip of Brady. Solid game for him. That's true. That may have been the play of the game when Matt Light recovered that strip sack on Brady. Very true.
You see him trying to run with it, though?
Yeah, that was a mistake. That was definitely a mistake. Dude, just go down. Don't make it any worse for you or anybody else. Just hit the ground. Do what you need to do. Number 2, Chargers gave up 15 turnovers all year. Sunday, 4. Yeah, I pointed that out in the opening hour. I totally agree, Gabe, right there. I mean, some of that you got to put on their shoulders, and some of that you got to give the Patriots credit for. Especially the last one. Especially the last one. Because that was all Troy's doing. Number 3, Gates was held in check through most of the game, and the other receivers were shut down. That's also true. They did a pretty good job. I think, you know, we had a question earlier about how we, you know, contained Dallas Clark. I think you throw the Antonio Gates D on him. Because I think, you know, they kept Gates from beating him. Probably as good a tactic as any. 4, Belichick waiting for the Chargers to take the field and come out of the tunnel, and at the same time with sheer tactical brilliance and got San Diego fans mad at the get-go. Yeah, that's I missed that opening part, but I didn't realize that that was the case. So if that's the case, yeah, I agree. That's, you know, that kind of gets in their heads and gets them yapping to get to start the game. And hey, it's good. It worked, I guess, huh? Because they apparently did a lot of woofing, according to Rosie Colvin. Number 5, I get to give both defenses little credit in my Pats 31-30 prediction. Troy Brown did no dance when he stripped the ball. Caldwell did no dance when he recovered it. No player coach said bleep them after the game, unlike San Diego did last year. I don't remember that as Brian Lowe joined us here on, from Patriots Video News. Did we have instances of the Charger players in that 41-17 game last year say bleep them or bleep you to the Patriots or Patriots fans?
You talking about that post-game stuff or are you talking about during the game? And
both.
I didn't remember too much of it what I've since I've reading some stuff in the last day or two looking back at that game. I was somewhat reminded not of remembering seeing all that stuff happening, but I was reminded of reading about it the next day. So I didn't have any firsthand information about that, but I know that I think it was Tom Curran had in particular had a story from right after the game, and when I saw that again yesterday, it reminded me of hearing about that after the game. I didn't see or hear any of it as it was going on.
I didn't either. And number two, I don't even remember that going on because I think we were left with the overwhelming impression that we got sucker punched in that game.
Put it this way. If the Chargers after that game had, in the immediate aftermath of a win like that, ending a team's 21-game winning streak and beating a team so one-sidedly at home, I have no problem with a team or players being emotional and maybe somewhat crossing the line, even if it's slightly not real classy or slightly disrespectful to the other team. You know what? If you're the losing team in that case, you just got to turn around, suck it up. And from what I remember, I don't think the Patriots had any counter punches to the Chargers last year. And in this case, you know what? I don't have too much of a problem with what the Patriots did. I mean, let's face it. They won
either.
A game. I mean, in the immediate aftermath of a win like that, sure, you know, I mean, there's limits to what anyone should or shouldn't be doing or saying. Dancing on the field after a win like that, I got no problem with that.
No.
You know, I mean, hey, you know.
When you consider the emotions of the game and because, you know, the Chargers make a point of dancing after big plays, then you have to expect that others are going to dance against you when they make a big play.
Right.
In a mocking fashion, even. If you're going to do it, you need to expect to have it done back to you. And it's like the Chargers took offense that it was done back to them.
Right.
You know what? Then you're being completely unrealistic as well as immature. That pretty much says
it all
right there.
John, I haven't been listening. I haven't been listening to the whole show. My guess is that's not the first time he's used that bite today.
That's true.
Should have heard the PFW open.
It's not okay.
That's all it
over
was.
The course of we're now about 3 hours and 40 minutes into new programming for this day.
Right.
That can't be the first time Gary has thrown that out there. I didn't think so.
No, it wasn't.
Maybe by tomorrow or Thursday we'll be on to whatever the Indianapolis. Here we go. He's got one ready to go.
Trips right. 255. X block slant. H disco. Alert 12 trap.
Now, if there is a spare hour during Patriots.com radio, maybe we can just run all of Peyton Manning's TV ads.
I think we should.
You know, if you have that one hour block available,
I think
we should. Maybe we can get each one of those.
That should be a feature tomorrow or Thursday. We should run any Manning ad that you failed to hear or see. I think that would be a good idea. What do you think?
What's up, baby?
How you doing?
Good. You?
back to the whole all this Charger stuff. You know, I certainly don't think that the Patriots are without their fair share of acts that are either trash talking or mocking the other team. They take part. There's no question about it. They take part in that on the field, off the field. You know, I think in this case, both teams were guilty as charged to some degree leading up to it. And I think when all is said and done, the team that was going to win that game had a reason to act, to be emotional and on the field in the immediate after. I mean, this especially for the Patriots, by the time they get on the plane leaving a road game, I mean, they're on to the next game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a little bit of celebrating. There's a little bit. I mean, I was on the plane with the team. There's not a huge difference between a win or a loss on the plane. They celebrate. They celebrate in the locker room like you've never believed. They celebrate, as they're getting onto the buses and all that. I mean, part of it is you're tired by the time, the game's over and you're on the plane. But, they're on to the next game. I mean, they're happy. Everyone's happy. It's a little louder, a little more boisterous. But you know what? They're on to that, on the field. What I'm saying is, on the field is the time that they're going to celebrate. Whether they're celebrating by doing the Sean Merriman dance, they clearly don't really like this guy. They don't like this guy. They did his dance. Big deal. I mean, you know what? LaDainian Tomlinson, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt to some degree. This is the first time I think anyone has ever heard him even come close to crossing the line in terms of speaking or acting. So give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, but I got to be honest, LaDainian, your team lost at the game that you probably figured that you should have won.
Let's move on, you should have won.
And what he said a half an hour after the game, even that, it was over the line, especially to bring the idea of maybe it starts with their head coach. I don't think any player should say that about the opposing coach. But, even that, a little bit still the heat of the moment. It was still, you know, the game was still fresh in his mind. Reiterating it the next day, and, you know, I think, you know, you get over it and come back stronger next year. So, you know, that's the way I that's what I feel about
it. I don't disagree. Yeah. Makia says, John, I completely agree with you about the celebration issue. Some Pats were in the wrong for being overly exuberant, so to say. But LT and the rest of the Chargers are being more than a little bit extra with the classless comments. To continue to talk about it days later is whining, like you said. And to take a pot shot at Bill Belichick is just plain rude and disrespectful, not to mention the whole I won't talk to Bill Belichick if he's my coach in the Pro Bowl comment.
Yeah.
I thought that was that was where LaDainian Tomlinson crossed the line.
And especially since that was another a full day later, you have a little bit of time to, you know, just cool your mind and cool yourself and just kind of say, you know what, okay, I got to put this past me and get back to the classy way I am.
By his own comment, I guess Marty Schottenheimer is classless, too, since a good number of Charger players have found themselves on the wrong side of the law this season. And no matter how wrong the Patriots may have been, LT is throwing stones in a glass house. Until LT goes on television and verbally chastises his own teammates, I think he should refrain from continually talking about the situation. Grow up and move on. We in Patriots Nation have another game to think about. Good email, Makia.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lou. Where's Lou from? Lou's from Harrisburg, PA. John, I think this whole thing of excessive celebration is running its course to dying and getting out of the league. Well, I hope so. LT had a good point in what he said, but his rules should apply to his team and all teams, so he should have worded what he said differently. I will now comment about Merriman and his playoff appearance in light of his steroid suspension. Jason Taylor protested this, as you know, and I think that rule is changing. I hope no player with steroid use should be allowed to play. This whole thing could have been avoided if he was not allowed to play in this game. Well, the rule, here we go, is what it is, and you have to play by the rules, and he did do his time. But, you know, the fact is that now it's going to be something he's going to have to live with for a while, and people rightfully so. I mean, the man cheated.
Yeah.
Knowingly or unknowingly, you still cheated.
And let's face it, a lot of, you know, a high percentage of players who do get caught cheating and cheating steroids and all that, they're not at all pro levels. They might get to where they are as, you know, legitimate NFL starters because of the steroid. This is one of the first times that we've heard of such a high-profile all-pro player like this where this is coming to, you know, this sort of situation is rearing its ugly head where we have to deal with this. And
right.
I think I read that a rule might be changed, and I certainly wouldn't disagree with that notion. You know, Tomlinson, as great as he is, in the year that he is suspended for a quarter of the games because of breaking the rules, I agree. I don't think he should be, you know, the rules as they are right now, he's got to be allowed. I mean, if you lead the league in sacks and all that, even if you lost four games, the rules are the rules. And he's allowed to be in the Pro Bowl, he's allowed to make it, and that's fine. I think they might change that.
It should be a five-game suspension and then make it where, you know, you have to be eligible for three-quarters of 75% of your team's games.
That's, you know, that's true. That's
because
fair,
a five-game suspension wouldn't allow you to be eligible.
Yeah.
Right?
You're right. Yeah.
That's really how it should be.
Yeah, that could be.
I was just thinking a little while ago, too. I'm like, you know, what happened if we did what the players do every time they make, like, a tackle or a six-yard catch or something like
every
that?
Every time they make a good point on the radio, you...
Yeah. Gary, that was an outstanding clip you just played. Woo! Yeah!
And there are some cameras in here, so maybe, you know, who knows who's taping this? You know, you can find it on YouTube. you might
That's
find...
Right.
If you come up with
yeah!
your own... You got to find come up with something unique, though, John. We need something unique, all right?
We could belly bump. No, it's not.
Yeah,
let's not.
Pass it. I'll stay in my corner of the studio.
Yeah, that's right. Stay over there in your side of the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, woohoo! You know, all right.
Some of your Texas try and get in there.
It says, where are we going here? Oh, all these excessive celebrations should be banned from the league, but all teams do it, and this should be used as an example to change things because it regards two great teams, such Patriots and Chargers. Okay, I'm not
Look,
sure.
I mean, there's excess.
I understand.
There's excess in everything, but if a team is ever going to have the opportunity to do it celebrating, especially after a playoff win, you know, I mean, there are lines you can cross, but, you know, do it, you know, celebrating on the field in a team way after you win a playoff game on the road.
Right.
I can't see a reason to ban that. I mean, you know, you get into specific situations where, you know, and again, it's very subjective where a team might cross the line. I don't think the Patriots crossed the line, but I don't think teams should have to worry about excessively celebrating a playoff win on the road if they're doing it in a team celebration manner.
Right.
I mean, I just, you know, the opposing team's not going to like it, but you know what? That's the way it is. I mean, win the game. You
true.
Know, play better and win the game, and you'll
true.
Celebrate in front of your home fans.
That's true. Jack in Jack is or just says JT here, but his email says Jack. John, I'd like to thank Marty Ball for the win Sunday. Mr. Schottenheimer made two major mental mistakes that I feel were his team's demise. First, the 4th and 11 call in the first quarter was not only a bad call, but an insult to the Pats and their defense. He thought he could roll over us. Wrong. He just made us mad.
Yeah.
Good point. Second, the big red flag he threw after the refs tried to talk him out of it on the obvious fumble in the second half. The time out they lost could have been the difference of 10 yards closer on missed field goal. Well,
yeah,
those are two,
and if it's
two glaring mistakes.
And if it's true that Philip Rivers was the one to tell him, hey, you should challenge it, and he just went ahead and did it. Hey, Philip Rivers might prove to be a pretty good, you know, smart, bright quarterback in this league. If I'm the head coach, I'm not just taking his word for it. I'm using other sources, and plain and simple, it didn't make any sense to waste the time out there. I mean, you know, obviously it's a huge turning point play in the game,
right?
But don't all teams have replay, you know, coaches monitoring?
Generally
this?
Speaking,
I mean, there's no
should
you
be somebody up in the box saying, no, Marty, don't throw the flag. You know, it's not going to get overturned.
I mean, it was a huge turning point. It wasn't the difference in the game.
Right.
I mean, it turned out that it played a huge role in the difference of the game, but at the time. You know, is that your who's
that's
what
mine
got
off
going
in the distance.
On? I mean, I'm pulling
my
on,
phone's
pulling.
Ringing in the
all
distance.
Right, all right, okay. You know, at the time, you know, timeouts were going to be critical in that game, and it certainly wasn't close enough that you're going to risk a timeout. I mean, you mentioned too the 4th and 11, you know, not kicking the field goal, that turned out to be the difference in the game in terms
right.
of pure points. Didn't really make any sense. And then you know, it's a really interesting you know thought process here about all the drops that the Chargers had, the boneheaded plays like Eric Parker's muff punt and not immediately just, I mean, hey, every punt returner is going to muff a punt here and there, but to not just immediately jump on it, you know, all this stuff. I mean, you can't blame the coach for all this, but there's got to be a tone set. You know, why is it that, you know, Patriots players, last year's Denver playoff game notwithstanding, but they have a pretty good track record of fairly mistake-free situations when critical times come about. There's got to be something to the tone a coach sets, the confidence that a coach does or doesn't give a team, and it's got to reflect on Marty Schottenheimer. I mean, you can't blame him for, you know, Antonio Gates dropping a pass in the first half. You can't blame him for Eric Parker muffing the punt. You know, you can't blame him for every, you know, for Philip Rivers, you know, throwing that little ball in the flat that Roosevelt Colvin. You can't blame Schottenheimer for everything, but not being able to come through
yep.
in clutch situations, making boneheaded mistakes. There's got to, it does have to come back to some degree to the preparation, the mentality of a team, which that extends to the head coach. I mean, it was baffling to see how this game went and how, you know, the Chargers based purely on stats. You know, if you looked at the stat sheet and you didn't look at the final score, you say, oh, the Chargers won this game and Tomlinson dominated and, you know, Tom Brady had three interceptions. I mean, you know, the yards per carry. I mean, if you look at the yards per carry for the Patriots running backs, the interceptions for Tom Brady and the stats for LaDainian Tomlinson, I mean, who objectively is going to say that the Patriots won that game?
No one.
But if
or
you look at
very few anyway.
But if you take a look at a column that's not in the stats sheet, which is just boneheaded mistakes, Team A, Team B, I mean, they're all in. They're all in the Chargers. I mean, it's hard to look at this and not look back to the coach or both the respective coaches and you know the way a team prepares and is mentally strong and. Yeah, that's what it came down to in this case. That's really what it came down to.
Gary, you got a note here from Alex in Somerville who says, South Park in an episode a few seasons back that had to do with a dance-off. There were great lines like, if someone dances at you, you have to dance back. It was funny and relevant to the last game.
Very funny, you get.
So I wanted you to know that you got an email here.
Make me feel good.
I had actually wanted, you know, in fact, we were planning today to go over... I know, that's getting a little obnoxious, isn't it?
We'll
I should have shut it off. I know. I apologize
right.
for that.
You're in demand.
Yeah, you know, I apologize 1,000 times.
If you're listening, if you're trying to reach John and you're listening to the show, stop calling.
Yeah, really, stop calling.
Or call 508-543-7482.
Yeah, by the way, yeah, it'd be my wife. Honey, could you bring home milk and bread, please? Yeah. I had, you know, obviously wanted to, you know, do the little nitpicky session here as we normally do on Tuesdays, Bri, but it's kind of hard really to find a lot to really be terribly nitpicky about when you realize that the end result is you have a berth in the AFC Championship game again. So in that regard, I mean, can we be, you know, concerned about a few things? Maybe.
Sure, yeah, but I mean...
I mean, you know, Tom did throw three interceptions, but, you know, he won the game, so...
But I think the Chargers were going to be arguably the stiffest potential competition the Patriots are going to face in the playoffs.
I do agree with that, and I also, as I mentioned a couple of times in the opening hour, I think that, you know, as I told Hank Bauer of the Chargers radio network last week, I said I thought the winner of the game would go on and win the Super Bowl, and I'm not going to shy away from that. I think the Patriots are in the front runner seat.
And if the Patriots, you know, were able to, quote-unquote, get away with some of the mistakes that they made in this game, and let's face it, I mean, this was maybe the worst playoff game Tom Brady has had beginning to end statistically. What he did at the end of both halves is typical Tom Brady, and that's what he's all about. But from, I mean, three interceptions were the most he's ever had. 51 pass attempts were the second most he's ever had in a playoff. I mean, I'm talking about a playoff game, and that was partially a result of the poor running game, but you know, just the way the game was playing out. It was one of his worst statistical games, and even a lot of the incompletions were poor throws. But if they were able to get away with this kind of stuff against the Chargers defense, against LaDainian Tomlinson, and still come through at the end on the road in an extremely loud environment, you know, 6 hours away and all that, then I think this was going to be the toughest test they were going to face. Can they lose going forward? Absolutely. But I think this was the toughest. So if they can get away with the mistakes that they made in this game, and they maybe even, you know, you got to figure they're going to cut down on some of them going forward. I don't think Tom Brady's going to look as bad against the Colts as he did against the Chargers. If that's the case, then you got to figure they're going to win these games.
Yeah, you would think so. I think there's a number that stands out right here, Brian, that really I think is one of the reasons why I think the Patriots not only will end up beating the Colts, but maybe win the Super Bowl again this year, and it's because Tom Brady now is 26-4 in games decided by less than 7 points, including 5-0 in playoff games. When the game is close, and I mentioned this in the opening hour of the show today, when the game is close, you cannot deny that he has some sort of ability to bring his team up and down the field. And I had no doubts at the end of the game that he was going to do that again this last week, and he did. And until someone, sometime, proves that wrong, you should go with Tom Brady.
And this was, I mean, when you start considering all the elements involved, it's staggering. Their running game was abysmal in this game. Neither Corey Dillon nor Lawrence Maroney were able to do much. Kevin Faulk had a few plays.
But they adjusted so incredibly well.
They really only had three wide receivers in this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kelvin Kite and Chad Jackson dressed. Chad Jackson didn't play, and Kelvin Kite, he didn't make a catch, did he? I mean, I don't think he got into the field.
He
probably only got on the field in special teams. They were going with three wide receivers, only one of which was with this team before this year, only two of which were with the team when the year began.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Watson had one catch in this game. Daniel Graham had two catches in this game. David Thomas had none. When you consider all of this and the fact that they were going against the team that obliterated the rest of the league in terms of total sacks, had two of the top sack specialists in the game, including Sean Merriman, you know, one of the best defensive lines in the game. When you put all this into play, what Tom Brady was able to do at the end of the half, in that you know, to bring them within four, and then at the end of the game. Now, obviously, his interception was included in this, and he was bailed out by Troy Brown, just an amazing play by Troy Brown. But then, okay, so they get the ball back, and he just goes right back to work. It's staggering. I mean, what he was able to do in this game, and, you know, if he had lost this game or if they didn't score at the end, if they didn't get the field goal, we'd be looking at this statistically and we'd be saying, boy, what happened to Tom Brady?
Right.
That's, you know, that's two out of his last three playoff games. He's had a combined, what, you know, five interceptions and the team has turned the ball over, you know, eight times and all this. But what he is able to do in the end of these games, and, I mean, he and the entire team, but he's the guy in charge. I mean, he's running the show, as several players said afterwards. It really is mind-boggling what he's able to do. And I just have I have very little doubt that, especially the way you could tell the mindset of this team, sort of an anger and definitely an us against the world mentality. I don't see them going to Indianapolis and coming home with a loss. I really don't.
There were two plays that I thought really stood out. One of them in particular really did not have an effect on the game. But I just thought because of the sheer athleticism involved, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention. Number one has to be Colvin's interception way he had to twist and turn and come down with that ball. And it's too bad the Patriots didn't get any points out of that. But it was just a remarkable, remarkable play made by a very talented individual, number one. The other play, even though we've, you know, sort of loosely criticized Ellis Hobbs if he was one of the ones dancing and woofing at the end of the game. And this is where I disagreed with Paul Perillo earlier. He thinks Ellis Hobbs is nothing but Chris Canty. And I disagreed because I really thought that Hobbs, when he made that knockdown at the goal line in the first, you know, quarter of the game that Eric Parker could have had on the 3rd-and-11 play.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was a great, great play by Hobbs. Now, it looked initially like he was beat. And it, obviously, if he had been 6 foot tall, he would have had much. He probably would have picked it off. But he stretched, even though that Parker was behind him by what, 5 yards? It seemed like.
Yeah, he, you know, he got his hand on a few balls. I mean,
that was a tremendous play, and that was obviously was a huge difference in the game.
Absolutely, and you know, going back to the Colvin one, you know, the Patriots didn't score on that possession, but the Chargers had first and goal. I mean, it's not first and goal, first and 10 around, I think it was the 38, 39 yard line, something like that.
Yep.
And you know that if that ball did get over, you know, on the Tomlinson's 58 yard screen pass, you know, catch and run that led to, I think, Michael Turner's touchdown earlier in the game. We all remember that play. Roosevelt Colvin jumped up, had his arms outstretched, and Rivers got the ball just over his arms into Tomlinson's hands, and Tomlinson ran all the way to the six. Well, if Colvin doesn't get his hands on this one, who knows if the same thing happens? I don't know exactly what the rest of the Patriots defense, where the Patriots defense was, but, you know, if Tomlinson gets his hands on that ball, he may have had some running room, and he may have gotten into position where the Colts were going to, you know, easily get another touchdown and just break the game open. So, you know, that was huge. And then, you know, I think Hobbs, you know, he a couple times, you know, he got his hands on balls that, you know, they weren't called fumbles or you know, the one Antonio Gates also. There was the Parker one. There was another one with Gates where, you know, they weren't called fumbles. They were called incompletions, and, you know, Hobbs did a good job breaking it up at least. Yeah, you know, I mean, he's hit or miss, you know. He's hot and cold. You know, you can pinpoint some great plays he's had. You can pinpoint some plays like the one against the Jets earlier in the year where with Cotchery, you're like, whoa, what are you thinking? Why are you getting all twisted around? You know, he's hit or miss, but, you know, I mean, he's only his second year. He's learning.
So what about PVN this week?
PVN, we are rolling. We've got, you know, yesterday we looked at, you know, obviously a full recap of the Chargers game. A little more today. We're talking about Brady. We're talking about Tomlinson and some of the post-game comments. Mm-hmm. And a couple, actually, we're looking at the Colvin play, getting some, you know, Roosevelt Colvin's thoughts on that interception.
Okay, good.
And, you know, starting tomorrow all the way through the rest of the week.
Colts, Colts, Colts.
It's all about the Patriots and Colts. Third postseason meeting between these two teams in 4 years. Doesn't get much better than that.
That's why this is now a rivalry.
Oh.
I think we can officially say it's a rivalry.
They've met in the regular season every year for the last 4 years because they're always winning their respective divisions.
Right.
And 3 out of 4 years meeting in the playoffs. I mean, how do you,
and they used to be divisional opponents, so they've played each other for a long time.
They've played each other for a long time.
Now that the Colts have actually won the last two in the regular season,
right,
you know, now you can call it a rivalry because you have to have both teams win for it to really be a rivalry.
Sure, absolutely. This one.
That's
this
counts.
This is the regular season.
You'd rather win this one than the one earlier in the year. There's no doubt about
no
that.
No question about
you
that.
You want to do a quick prediction then?
Well, I'm predicting a Patriots win. You know, I think they're going to be able to score, and I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I would say somewhere in the, you know, the 30-17, 30-20.
Sounds like
I don't know. I'm going Patriots, but you know, score. I gotta put a little more thought into it, maybe. But I think you can get 30 points in this game.
We'll leave you some good karma on those thoughts today.
Sure.
Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. Manana.
Makes a tackle, drives it upfield to the 10, to the 5.